Hello and welcome to another episode of the Seven Figure Agency Podcast, where we're interviewing highly successful digital marketing agency owners from across the country. And today I'm really pumped. We're joined by Alex Danner from Fence and Deck Marketers. He's grown his agency to seven figures, on the brink of multiple seven figures, serving that space. So if you're excited, give me a yes, give me a let's go, give me a comment below. Alex, thanks so much for being here and congratulations on your success.
Yeah, thanks, Josh. Excited to chat with you today and go through it all and the whole journey. Super excited.
So before we get started, let's kind of give us the lay of the land in the agency today. Like, where are you now? Like, what's the situation in the business?
Sure. So right now we're at about 160K MRR and we have 26 full-time team members. Yeah, we've gone pretty heavily into EOS and learning about that and gotten to a pretty good point with having the right leadership team in place and, you know, doing L10 meetings, having things, a bit more organized. And yeah, I would say for the most part right now, we have, you know, good leadership across the board. We do websites, SEO, we do pay-per-click, LSAs, Facebook, kind of the standard suite. But yeah, we've been able to put the leadership in place into those different departments. And, you know, there's always bumps and things you got to deal with, but it's definitely at a place better than it ever has been in terms of the right structure and, everyone kind of having their responsibilities and their piece, you know, on the operation side, at least.
So good. So a really solid organization, obviously growing extremely quickly. Take us back. We'll get into the lessons along the way, but you know, how did you get into digital marketing, running an agency in the first place?
Yeah, so I actually had a software engineering background. So when I first graduated college, and kind of my major was related to that, I wanted to be a coder. I actually heard when I was in college that Instagram sold for like $1 billion. And I was like, whoa, I couldn't believe it. And I was already interested, but that was just kind of mind blowing. And that's just what I wanted to do. So when I got out of college, that's what I was doing, software engineering. I was building apps and doing some websites, but really custom mobile applications. And then basically I always wanted to have a business. I was working for somebody else and had a friend that was building custom apps. He had his own business and I just thought it was really cool. So offered to work for work with him for free outside of my normal job and kind of got better and better from that. Went half and half, you know, half working with him, half working in the other job, then eventually transitioned into full time. And then, it kind of evolved from there because we did websites, we were building WordPress, we were doing custom sites. But as we all know, you know, you're basically kind of hit a wall eventually and you're done with the project. There's nothing really else to make. And it's kind of hard to get that consistent flow. So I don't even remember where, but I started hearing about SEO and I was like, maybe that's the route to go. And I started learning about that and learning from like guys like Brian Dean and all that stuff and made that transition. We signed our first client at $200 a month and we were super excited. We thought that was like a gold mine and couldn't believe it. And, we just kind of progressed from there. And after meeting people like yourself and kind of learning what it was worth if you're doing it right, you know, we kind of increased it from there and, you know, of course, joined a seven-figure agency. And that's when things, you know, really started to escalate.
So I started with apps and programming and then kind of went into websites and then got into the full SEO digital marketing. Everyone's like struggles with niche selection and like, what niche should I do? Like, you know, how's that going to work? Obviously you're in the fence and deck space, which is a very unique niche. What made you go to that niche? Like, how did you decide on that as where you were going to cast your focus?
Well, basically, I guess rewind a little bit. When I had the agency, at first I would work with anybody and everybody, which is pretty common. So we would work with most types of businesses. And when I learned about your program and kind of the benefits of that, I fought it for a little bit, you know, to be honest, like it just kind of had all these other clients. But once I like really bought in and kind of heard it probably 100 times that's the way to go, it finally stuck. And that's when I started to take it more seriously. And I actually get asked that question all the time. And I really wish I had a better, like sexier answer, but it's really just, I had those clients already. And I'd done some fence work a little bit, but not like as a contractor, just on my farm. But you know, basically already had those clients. I liked those industries. It didn't seem like one that had a ton of agencies already in it. So it kind of just seemed like the right fit. And yeah, I guess I broke the rules a little bit by choosing two. I figured I'd hedge my bets a little bit. And since they were late.
Hand in hand. Sometimes like plumbing and HVAC, right? They work together in the same vertical. They refer business back and forth. They're in the same industry groups. So that's totally fine.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, let me try them both, and hopefully one of them takes off quick or something like that. So yeah, I just went with it, and I was pleasantly surprised how it all worked out, for sure.
So in your case, you had this generalist agency, you'd done websites, you'd done some SEO, you had this pool of clients, and you were trying to say, well, if I'm going to go from generalist to niche, who do I have in my existing client base that we're getting good results for, that I enjoy working with, that I'm just going to focus on? It sounds like you picked from the best of the best you already had some experience in, and that's why you went down that track.
Yeah, I would say that's the most of it. Just like the clients that I already had in those industries. And, you know, I think when I first joined Seven Figure Agency, you know, we were building case studies and all of these things. So I had to pick clients that I, you know, had, I could actually build those case studies with. So yeah, that was a big part of it too.
So talk to us a little bit about that transition, because a lot of agencies wind up, you know, pretty successful as a generalist business, but they realize it would be so much more efficient, so much more scalable. The marketing would be so much more effective. You know, how long did you, you know, play both sides, and you know, how did you make that transition to focused on one vertical?
Yeah, I would say it kind of happened naturally. Actually, kind of an interesting thing. I actually bought an agency from someone I met in Seven Figure Agency. He didn't have a very big agency, and he kind of wanted to get out. So I got it for a good deal, and he had clients across the board. You know, there's no real niche specific clients. So I kind of bought that. And then that was introduced into my other pretty broad, clients that I had. Turns out, luckily I got it for cheap, because I ended up losing all of those clients from the agency I bought, but luckily kept them enough to make a pretty good profit. But yeah, that one kind of stung. So, you know, I guess that piece there, and just like I said, I feel like I heard it 100 times before I bought into it. But once you like dive down and realize how hard it is to create websites or SEO or any of that stuff for like a law firm or a chiropractor to a contractor, you know, there's just so many industries there. It is just incredibly difficult to be great at all of those. I don't even think you really can be, honestly. So, we basically just, I kind of went back and forth for a while. You do what you got to do to survive, and, you know, kind of make sure you have enough money to pay for your family and your house and all of that stuff. But, I just slowly, probably too slow, just went more and more all my focus on that one thing, on those two industries, and just things started to click. We'd get more clients there. We would lose clients, like the legacy ones, or we would, you know, get rid of them or whatever. And it just kind of, it was kind of the story from the beginning, just probably moving too slow, but, you know, just kind of easing my way in, kind of just going in that direction. And eventually we picked up the momentum and got enough where we could just be like, all right, no more, you know, refer other contractors or other businesses to another seven-figure agency and go from there. So it was pretty gradual, I would say.
All right. So you kind of took your time. You're just like, okay, I'm going to focus on this. I'm going to start to attract the people in this space, continue to serve the legacy clients. Some of them will try to churn out, and it kind of replaced itself over time. Talk to me a little bit about what the program or what the growth programs look like for the industry you serve. Like what is the deliverable?
Yeah. So we keep it pretty standard. So we'll have base packages, website, SEO, AI optimization. Then next package would include pay-per-click ads or local services ads. And then from there, we add Facebook. So we used to do social media. We cut it out mainly because we're getting all these like problems with clients, and it's like the cheapest thing we offer. And they're having issues with, you know, they had their own ideas for what exactly they wanted to look like. And it just, I was like, why are we even doing this? You know, we're charging like $500 a month just to get like, you know, have all these issues. So ended up just cutting that out, and that proved to be a pretty good idea.
Awesome. So you decided, forget the, like, especially an aesthetic niche like decks and fence, like they want it to look pretty. They've got a very specific thing in mind, maybe different than what you were trying to do. And so eliminate that hassle and just focus on what you do well. Can you give me an idea price point wise? Like what's the average monthly fee for those clients?
Yeah, so super easy and basic. It's $2,000-$4,000 a month.
Okay.
So, you know, base is two all the way up to four. And then, you know, if there's multiple locations, that's additional, things like that. But one location, yeah, $2,000-$4,000.
Got it. So we know the niche. We kind of have an idea what the program deliverables are. Talk to us about how you were able to get your first seed clients. Because you're at 160,000 monthly recurring now. As you transitioned from the generalist agency to the niche agency, you had to decide, okay, I'm going to go after these deck and fence companies. What worked well early to get those, let's just call it five or six clients in that space?
Yeah, I mean, first five or six, probably just the basic stuff like the Facebook ads. I think we did some of that. That got some traction. Probably referrals, I would say. We never had a ton of success with Facebook ads, but that was probably what drove it in the beginning. And then, yeah, probably some referrals. It didn't really, it was very stagnant at that point. We weren't getting a whole lot of traction. I didn't know like what we're doing wrong with the Facebook ads basically, but we were just kind of getting by, but we never had, you know, a big breakthrough of what, you know, what we were looking for. So to get to, I guess, to that point where we were actually like moving forward and taking bigger jumps, I actually heard, I mean, this is nothing new within Seven Figure Agency, but, you know, getting involved in the niche, you know, I kind of just thought like, hey, I'll be able to figure out a way to do this and, you know, run Facebook ads or run this or that, or just good SEO and I'll get enough leads. But, I don't know, somebody said it one time, one for the 100th time probably. And it just clicked. I was like, all right, I just have to do this. And a lot of the things that you push us to do and, you know, the right things to do are just uncomfortable to me. And I would imagine a lot of people, you know, public speaking and setting up booths and shows, and I'm a introvert, you know, big time, I would say. So all of those things just was like, all right, whatever, you know, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do all the pieces and I'm just going to go for it. That's for sure when everything really started to gain that momentum, you know, meeting all the heavy hitters and all the different industries and, you know, getting to know just, yeah, basically the guys that are leading those industries in different ways, you know, the associations or coaches, things like that. And then going to the events is just so huge. You know, it's so hard to like rationalize going to the events and like getting a booth. Cause you're like, oh, I spend $5,000-$10,000 on everything to get set up. What if I don't get a client? You know, that's probably what everybody thinks and what I thought too. But I was like, well, hopefully we get at least one, and we would, you know, usually get at least one. But what I realized is if you go to those booths and, you know, you have something fun at the booth to get people to come up to you, and then you spend that extra time figuring out who to talk to and kind of building that network and meeting people in person, I think you have to do that. Because if you're just like some internet marketing guy and they just see your face everywhere, but they've never met you in person, like, to me, it only goes so far. You know, they're just like, you know, what can you really, really say about it? So, you know, as I was going to the conferences and getting out of my comfort zone, speaking on stage, it just kind of snowballed from there. And I just kept going to events. You know, I never really said no to anything. Well, in the beginning, I couldn't really afford to do it. But nowadays, you know, pretty much say yes to every show. And if I don't get a client, you know, whatever, as long as I meet people and build that network, that's kind of the most important thing to me anyway.
So it sounds like it was a big shift point for you was to go away from staying behind Zoom and sending emails and running Facebook ads, but to get live and in person, find out where these deck and fence companies are coming together for the industry conferences, be at the event, have the booth, be uncomfortable, go to the mixers after hours. And it sounds like that blossomed from like you going bashfully and setting up your booth to you starting to develop relationships, to eventually even being invited. I saw you speak on a couple of these big event stages. So it feels like that was probably the biggest momentum shift for you in terms of new client growth.
Yeah, I would say that for sure. And one other piece that's part of, you know, the seven-figure growth program or whatever is the podcast. Mm-hmm. So having that podcast and just inviting people on there. I mean, a lot of people won't respond, but if I get a hold of them, like nobody says no, really, you know, like everybody pretty much will say yes. If you ask in person, you make it easy to schedule and all that stuff. Like it's such a game changer. I mean, you can bring on anybody and everybody onto that thing and, you know, make it good for them, promote them, really sell it in that regard. and you'll just kind of keep stacking up those, you know, those relationships. And I think we have like 100 episodes now. If I look back on it, I mean, I don't think there's any way, any possibility of growing anywhere close without having that, because just, you know, a Zoom like one-on-one call, maybe not as good as in person, but it's pretty close. You know, people can have a pretty good idea who you are.
All right. So like, it sounds like you leaned heavily into positioning yourself as the expert, getting involved in the industry. The big lever for you was the podcast. I could see you've invested in a beautiful podcast setup. You've got the mic, you've got the backdrop. It looks like a great camera. Did you start there, or were you a little bit more basic and you kind of elevated it as you stole the value?
We just kind of went off the checklist. So we started with webinars. You know, we still do those today. I feel like we have email deliverability issues. So like, we've gotten clients from it, but I'm always like skeptical on who's actually seeing it. But we've done that. We do the nurture sequence. We actually signed a client yesterday that told me he's been getting our emails like forever. And I was like, I think you might be the first person that said that was the reason why you like why you actually signed up or where you found us. But we send them constantly. You know, some of the other members in here kind of said like they just need to see your name. So my name, my face is in front of everybody all the time. Like when I go to the shows, you know, I never really know for sure, but I feel like it started to become a shift of like people started to recognize who I was, maybe as an annoying like marketer or something, but like just kind of recognized me more. And that, along with, you know, meeting the people and being in the same, you know, networks, kind of just built it and built that trust where they're like, oh, this guy's legit. He's not just some like random marketer that, you know, it's just him, something like that.
So it sounds like the growth system, you've really executed it. Like you've got the monthly webinar, the monthly podcast, you're doing it more frequent than that. And it seems quarterly, getting out to industry events, shaking hands, kissing babies, and then full positioning. You've got your published book, you've got speaking engagements, and you've got clients now coming to you pre-positioned to buy. They're like, wow, Alex, I've seen your videos. So I saw you speak at that thing, or I heard your podcast interview. And that's really paying off at this stage in the game.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That whole omnipresent system, like, you know, we sell it too. It's just so hard to like quantify. You know, you can easily do it with SEO. This is your return, the Google ads, Facebook ads, you know, to an extent, but it really is like just kind of doing it all and having it all work into one ecosystem and having a little bit of faith, because it's so easy to be like, oh, these webinars aren't working, let's stop them. And, you know, we've had webinars where nobody showed up in the beginning and I'm just talking to myself, but, you know, we post it, we run ads, we, you know, chop it up. I would say more than anything, it's just kind of having faith, like it's just going to work out. And I also just kind of looking at myself, like, why would I think I'm smarter than you, Josh, to like, you know, be able to outsmart this when you did this and everybody else did this? Like, why would I be special to get to these levels when you didn't, you know what I mean? It's kind of silly to think about, but I kind of probably put my ego aside, especially in the beginning, and was just like, all right, they know more than me. Let's go. Let's do it.
I love that. Massive uncomfortable action, it seems, because an introvert having to go to an event, and like, that's not easy to do, but you did the work and now you're reaping the rewards. Talk to me about, so I want to go deeper, because a lot of people are like, yeah, I'm doing the event thing, but you know, I feel uncomfortable. I put up the booth. I can't know what's coming to me. And then they like, I'm not forming joint venture relationships. When you think about these events, like, how are you approaching them? What are you doing at the event itself? What are you doing in the off hours? And there's no right answer, but I just love to know, kind of think, hear from you so that others can learn, like, how are you approaching it?
Yeah, I would say, you know, having an idea of who you want to talk to is a really good idea to like see before you go. Not that I'm like always great about this, and it's kind of evolved over time, but if you like clearly know there's some person that has influence, I would say talking to them and like scheduling them for the podcast while you're there would be an amazing idea. And I think that's kind of the idea, is like just going to figuring out who you should know, remembering their face, and then like having a schedule of going out and looking. But you can't really do that if you don't have somebody at the booth with you. So you got to get somebody out there. I have Matilde, who's fantastic, and she comes to all the events with me, and she's much more organized and really good about all this stuff. Frankly, without her, I probably wouldn't even sign up for some of these shows because I would forget. And you know, that's another big piece there. It's so easy to be like, oh, I don't want to go to the show, but she's like, no, we're going pretty much. So I would say that piece and having something to attract people to your booth. You know, my mentor, Brian Niebler, he said, you know, he brought a pull-up bar, like a hanging challenge to when he was at the roofing in the roofing space. And I found that out. I called the company and he was actually going out of business. He had only the last one that he used himself. And that was the only one. So we called him up and he was like, yeah, like I'm getting out of the business. I'll sell you the one I use. So we got super lucky there, but that makes it more fun too. And less awkward, you know, you're kind of just standing there. And if you're not like real good about talking to people, it's like super weird and awkward to just kind of sit there and be like, hey, you want to talk about marketing? So when you have the pull-up bar, you get people excited, or you have, you know, there's a million other kind of gimmicks or whatever you could do, but it just makes the day go by faster. It's more fun. You get good content. It's funny. And then, it's easy to have that conversation after, you know, they fall off. Nobody, barely anybody does it. It's really hard, but at the end, they're more likely to talk to you. And then you kind of say, hey, you know, what you want to do? And if they're interested, sign them up immediately, just like the podcast, get a discovery call set up or do it in the booth if you want to, one of the two, but don't get an email, don't get a phone number or a business card and then call them when you get back. Like that's a guaranteed disaster. You want to get them signed up. They may show, they may not, but you're definitely more likely to, you know, get them to show up if you do that.
I love it. So the principle here is, have a reason for them to come to the booth, right? It shouldn't just be like you standing behind the booth expecting people to flock to you, like to come talk to you as the marketer that no one wants to have that conversation. So could be pull-up contest, putting, could be spin the wheel. It sounds like in your case, Alex, you literally have a pull-up bar set up at the booth. It's like, hey guys, we're doing a pull-up challenge. Whoever does the most pull-ups is going to win a prize. Is that, and then there's like a leaderboard that's stacked?
No, so it's actually a hanging challenge, but it spins.
Oh, how long
pretty
can you
cool.
hang? Okay.
Yeah, so, and it's on a bearings, so it spins really easy. So you have to do 100 seconds for $100 cash. So I bring a bunch of $100 bills.
Okay.
I've had like five people do it. Brian told me
so
he had like
no one wins, and they just put
yeah,
try.
Like well, they do. Like Brian told me he had like two or three people ever do it, and I've already had five, and I'm like, what is like
in the defense niche, in the roofing niche.
Yeah. So, but it's always the same kind of person. You got to be really light. I actually set a goal for this quarter. I'm going to put it together and I'm going to try to get it. So by the time show season, I can do 100 seconds, but I don't even know if it's possible because it's always the really skinny guys that can do it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, but yeah, anything that's just fun, you know, people go nuts over it and they bring their friends and they're like, oh yeah, let me try it. And so many guys are like, I can do this. And you know, everybody like challenges each other and yeah, it's a good time.
So you create a little bit of a competition, a little bit of you know, fun around your booth, as opposed to just being the boring guy that's handing out flyers or your book. How do you transition that? I think this is what will be really instructive for everybody. It's like, all right, I've got a reason for them to come. They're not coming because they want to learn about my marketing, but they're at my booth and they're doing a contest or they're putting. How do you parlay that into let's have a chat, like while you're here, about how we might be able to help you?
Yeah, so I usually just I don't know if I'm that great at this or not, to be honest, but I think all the shows you have some kind of name tag on it, so you can kind of see where they're from and all that stuff. And yeah, I don't know, you kind of get an idea of who's who and if they're like a, you know, worker there, if they're an owner. Usually it's not always right, but I usually kind of start with that to see who they are, because if you got a big group, you kind of have to be selective of who you want to go after.
It's worth a little bit of time here, right?
Yeah, because before you know it, the whole group will be gone. So I usually look at that and just, you know, I'm like, oh, I see decks in the name or construction or whatever, and just be like, just ask them, you know, like you have a deck company or you have a fence company, you know, are you the owner, you know, and just ask little questions about that. And then usually we'll talk about, you know, how things are going, how did that this last year go, things like that. And then if things are going well, you know, probably parlay it into talking about, you know, if you wanted us to look at it, custom audit, you know, that whole pitch there, usually go about it and try to get them signed up from there. I wouldn't say I have like an exact script of it and probably should have be a little bit more organized, but I don't know. I like just having like basic conversations with people and just talking about whatever. I know I'm not pushy enough. Like I should be better at those shows, but I don't know. I'm just kind of weird about that. I just want to have a conversation, and if it kind of evolves, great. If not, you know, hopefully they didn't see me as like some sketchy marketing guy or something and might remember me.
It's working, right? So like, that's the key. Have your conversation, parlay that if it makes sense to an appointment, like feels like that's working. Two other things I wanted to go deeper on with the events, because the first thing you said wasn't like, oh, we did this cool thing at the booth, or we try and get them to come. It was try and find someone that is a mover and shaker that you can connect with and have on the podcast. I think that's a great idea. How is that materialized into like new business opportunities for you?
Absolute game changer. I would say the podcast above all else is probably the best idea, because it's just so easy to get them on there, and like people think it's cool. And yeah, I guess I do have the numbers, but I'd have to bring them up. But
you don't need to pull it up. Just to guess.
It's, I mean, quite a few. I mean, it was, if you talk about just direct signups, it's probably a pretty good number. But you know, meeting a coach in the industry and then going to one of their events, or you know, I would say too, like, you know, you'd be amazed at what people say yes to. Like, there's so many things I think in our heads we're like, they're going to say no to this or whatever. You know, it's almost like it goes back to like when you're dating in high school, you know, you're like worried of like somebody saying no, like a girl saying no or something. It's like, you have those thoughts that pop in your head, like, oh, there's no way that he would let me speak at his event. Like, he doesn't even know me. Like, I am amazed constantly at what people allow me to do and like, allow me to go. And, you know, like, it's unbelievable. You know, at the end of the day, if you have something to talk about, I guess that's what they want. And marketing's a hot topic with contractors. So, you know, I just ask and try to have as little shame as possible. And
or if they make it say no, right? Or not right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like they respect it too. You know, like I would respect the guy that asked me. It's kind of hard to get into that mindset, but they're not going to be mad because you asked to like do something specific. They might even feel bad saying no. So they do it anyways. And then you still get an opportunity. Yeah. So
get to the event, have a reason for them to come. Bubble up opportunities, look for the speakers, look for the coaches, look for the big names, and you're just trying to connect with them, invite them onto your podcast. That's a low next step that can lead to joint ventures, other speaking opportunities. I want to talk a little bit about speaking, because not easy to get speaking opportunities. And I know that you've had some at your industry events and conferences. Talk to us about how you approached that and how those opportunities materialized in your agency.
Yeah, so I'll give a shout out to Matilde on my team for like helping facilitate this, because it would be so hard for me to like know the dates and all the topics and put the presentations. Also, Emid from my team, he helps with creating the presentations. Like, without them kind of coordinating, I guess in the beginning it wasn't really like this, but if you want to like do it at scale, having somebody that can really help you and be organized about that is really crucial, and somebody that can consistently find out who's in charge of the education at these different events. You got to find out those people. And just like a sale, you got to be kind of relentless about following up without being annoying. So kind of have to find those people and reach out, try to give them a call. And then, usually they have like some ability to submit, like, I think it's like 5 presentations at once. And then I just, you know, do my best to create a good presentation and send it off and kind of hope for the best. But it usually does come down to kind of knowing somebody in there, you know, and if that person who's in charge of education is at the show, you know, find them, you know, like introduce yourself or send them a gift. You know, we've done that quite a bit. Like, we just send nice gifts out to people, you know, $100 gift or whatever. They're going to be extremely happy about it. You know, it's not the end of the world to spend $100 on something. So that whole gifting strategy you've taught us all, I try to remember to use it in different ways, not just, you know, new client gifts. Mm. So.
Love it. So now let's talk about the podcast, because it seems like that's been the big driver. You use it to position yourself. Talk to us about the frequency and the format. Like, what's the podcast look like in your agency?
So we try to do one a week, but you know, we eventually kind of run out of people and we got to like reset and things like that. But yeah, I don't know what the average was, but once a week is what we hope to do. And yeah, we basically, it's just an interview. Like I think, I don't know, this might've been a 7-figure thing, but like a kind of a workflow for the podcast. So there'll be kind of standard questions you ask. I have like a page for that. I kind of just stopped like giving information on them, because it's usually never, it's never once been a big deal to just show up. I think I had one person that wanted to do like a call before, but usually you show up and I'm like, it's just like this. We have a conversation. Like, I didn't have to prep for this. I figured you're going to ask me questions and I answer them, you know? So I try to have it as little interactions as possible, and then, or, you know, not give a whole lot of detail, and then just get them on the podcast. And nowadays I'll usually kind of give a bunch of info to ChatGPT and get a bunch of questions. I don't even spend that much time on it. I'm just kind of like, okay, these are mostly good. And usually while I'm talking, I type out some things if I have an additional question, or I ask, you know, elaborate on the answers that they give me. And that's kind of really it. You know, I don't go a whole lot further than that, and try once a week, but it's probably more like maybe twice a week.
So a couple times per month. It looks like a nice setup. So you invested in that. Is it always an interview? Are you ever just teaching from the podcast? Are you looking for clients? Are you looking for like successful people in the space, joint ventures, or is it a mix of all of it?
It's everybody. So we bring on, you know, we've had like tactical, you know, strategies, where we're going after, like if it was at a manufacturer event where we knew it was like high quality, we can get the email list and then we try to invite any of them on to the podcast and then try to sell them. It's been so random, you know, like anybody that might be able to provide value. It could be a vendor, a manufacturer. We've had any type of person on the podcast. It's really, if it could provide value, that's what we want to do. Like, I talk about the company a little bit, but really in all of the things we do, social media, podcast, the webinars, like, yeah, we might add a little bit of a plug at the end, but I kind of went from the idea of like provide value, give free content, and then people will contact you if they need help. That's probably similar to what you told me, you know, way back when. So I really dove into that. I was like, all right, let's be consistent no matter what, even if nobody shows up, let's just do it. And yeah. I guess it worked out.
It's working great. So tactically speaking, because this is something that comes up all the time, are you doing this on Zoom, or are you doing it on Riverside or some other platform? And what does the syndication look like after the fact, like editing the podcast? How complex are you getting? Are you just keeping it raw? And then like, where are you putting that stuff out in order to have it seen and to kind of build that authority?
Yeah. So I actually want to switch. We use Zoom. Riverside's much nicer. So I actually want to switch really soon to that. But we do use Zoom, and basically we'll get the recording. We'll add it to all the, what is that? Buzzsprout? Is that what it's called? Where you can like send it to all the podcast platforms. We do that. We record it on video. So we put it on YouTube. We put it on the channels. And then we also cut up clips from it. So Emmett from our team will basically go in and find like little tidbits or useful information and chop it up and do it as a social media post. And actually another side note on that too, a big thing that we did, this is another one of those, like I never really know how well it worked, but it seems to be a really good idea, is chopping up those conversations. So if you're talking with a very noticeable person in an industry that everybody's going to know the face of, you know, chop up that ad or that, something good that you're talking about on the podcast and then run it as an ad, you know, the whole dollar a day strategy. We do that with a lot of different, podcasts, and I don't know, in my head, it just seemed to make sense. Maybe somebody told me about it, but, I thought I'd just kind of like, oh, just put my face next to somebody that everybody knows, and then maybe they'll just kind of draw connect the lines or whatever.
Love it. So big picture, it looks like the growth system, like you chose your niche, you put together your program packaging, you started doing Facebook ads, but then really got involved in the industry events, consistency, speaking opportunities, consistent with the podcast and the webinar. And that's like where the most of the deal flow is coming from in the agency.
Yeah, I would say that, and just from people I've met, just referrals, I guess. Like, if you get in with somebody that has a lot of weight, it's kind of like the joint venture. I've offered joint ventures to so many people, and everyone says no, in terms of being paid. But nowadays it's like, they probably regret not getting paid because it'd probably be pretty substantial. But you know, nobody's ever said yes to that, but they were always involved. And it's usually like, if you find a group of contractors that kind of all know each other and already comfortable with each other, and then you kill it for one of them, it seems to spread and kind of go from there. And then you can present to somebody else that's a friend, and you can use their case study, and it just kind of all comes together. It seems like, you know, if they trust this person and they chose you, it just over time, I don't know, I guess they just start to trust you more and more, even if you haven't even spoke to them. So
good. So yeah, obviously doing good work, developing the relationships, all of it kind of leads to this viral sensation where like the deals just start to come in. Talk to me a little bit about your sales process. So somebody like, okay, they saw the podcast or they saw an ad and they're like, okay, I'd like to talk with you. Walk me through, like, just high level, what is a typical, you know, new client conversation flow look like?
Yeah. So absolute game changer. I'm giving Matilda a lot of plugs here, but she is awesome and like
waiting on Matilda.
Yeah. Yeah. But having somebody that can answer the calls and be on top of it, because as you know, the owner, there's a million things to do all the time, even though it's, you know, going well, but I do not want to follow up. Like, you know, I do not want to do all that. I hate doing that. I hate reminding myself. And usually it's just like so forced and fast and I don't have the time to do it. So Matilda, among, you know, a million things, she's really good about that. And she's much more personable. I mean, or, you know, like she's more inclined to be a sales type role, I guess, than I am. I'm more like, I would say operational. So she's fantastic at like, you know, wants to talk to people more than I do, I would say probably as well. Maybe she denied that, but having somebody that can have those first conversations and kind of feel people out is huge, because as you're growing, you have such little time. There's no way I would have the time to follow up with them. I really just want to talk to the people that are already pre-qualified. So this is probably another thing I learned from you or somebody in the program, but she'll have the checklist to make sure there are certain revenue, make sure they look legit. They're not a, you know, bad reviews all over the place or something, and then schedule that strategy call with me. So I never even really have a conversation with somebody unless it's on the strategy call when I do the presentation, unless there's like, you know, I just have a connection to them for whatever reason. You know, I met them and like, I just feel bad and I'm, you know, just want to do it myself or something, but usually I don't. And we'll just have the Zoom presentation where I do an audit. I don't hold anything back. Like I don't do cookie cutter presentations. So I've been told maybe go into a little bit too much detail, but I want to like show them how it is and like give them a presentation that they've never seen before. So I like to be very visual and try to get them to understand it and then go on from there. And I mean, my percentage is pretty high, so it seems to be working. You know, I just don't like the idea of showing the same thing to everybody. You know, I feel like that's how everyone does. And I want to, at the very least, like get some aha moments. And yeah, they could do it themselves, but hopefully they think positively of me and come back, or they tell a friend, you know, whatever.
So discovery call on the front end, somebody vets the prospect, make sure there's a good fit, then moves to a call with you. Not canned. You said presentation. Is it you screen, like showing your screen and showing them, or is it like slides that you're going through?
It's both, but it starts with slides. So I have and there's nothing, you know, just have a presentation and I might show my screen and show other things throughout too. But yeah, usually do a mixture.
Awesome. Okay, so we've talked about how you get the clients, how you land the clients. Let's talk a little bit about operations. Now $160,000 in monthly recurring revenue, that's a lot of clients served. What is the operational behind the scenes, under the hood look like?
Yep, so we have 26 full-time team members. We're trying to hire as quick as we can. We actually want to bring on like a HR kind of person to like help with it, because it's very slow. But we have an operations manager and, she's been with me since almost the very beginning. So she started out writing content, and then, over the years, Oxa, shout out to Oxa. She's been around for a very long time too. And, you know, it was kind of me and her in the beginning, building up, seeing your webinar, you know, your webinars and your instructions and being like, all right, well, let's create these webinars. So, it was me and her the most part in the very beginning. And we just kind of, built it up, and she was doing great. So kept, promoting her to different positions, and that's our ops manager. But, we all got involved with EOS about a year and a half, maybe, I can't remember. But, I know Lynn Askin, he was a mentor of mine, throughout Seven Figure Agency, and, he was promoting it, and it was expensive, so I didn't really want to spend that much, but, he kind of convinced me, and it just kind of reached a breaking point. So once we started EOS, that's when we really started to get the departments in place. So he did the exercise of like your org chart, and like, these are the departments of an agency. And, my name is on like 80% of them, and Ox is on the other ones. And we're like, oh, wow. Like, we had no idea this is how big of a problem this was. So, when we started doing that, we were, he was talking about getting the right people that wanted that job. I kind of assumed that people would just want to be the manager of a department, and was blown away by how that wasn't the case. I was just so wrong in that. And, it was very eye-opening and really good, because then I was like, all right, well, we need to find a manager that wants this role. So over time we started hiring, and as we were making more money, I could afford, more expensive roles, things like that. And, a lot of trial and error, built up that development, that whole operational structure, where we had a head of, the operations, and then, the development, the content, SEO, ads, and, graphic design. And those are kind of, I would say, the main ones. And then the sales, me and Matilde, but we're definitely not where we want to be, but that's kind of the overall structure now. Still got quite a few we want to add though.
So it sounds like implementing EOS, the entrepreneur operating system, getting the leadership team in place, starting to do the level 10 meetings, doing the quarterly planning, building that operating system has helped you guys continue to scale, maintain quality standards, even while the company's grown.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you'd be able to, I guess there's probably people that have done it, but I don't see how we would have done it. We would have had way worse churn. Let's put it that way. You can always create a million sales or whatever. But yeah, the churn, I mean, we've always had extremely good churn. I mean, under 3%, definitely this year we're like around 2 or so, but, I forget what it was last year, but it was somewhere, it was good then. So I think I've grown slow in that regard too, probably. I didn't want to like grow too fast, but at the same time, I'm not a sales background. So if somebody's better at sales, they probably would have grown quicker than I had. And I probably would have too, and gotten into trouble. I probably would have just gotten sales and bad operations, but, it hasn't been perfect, but by the numbers, definitely proud of our whole team, keeping it around 2% this year. So, I guess something's working.
That's really good. So the team, is it virtual? Is it in office? Like, and talk to me about that part of it.
Yeah, it's all virtual. So never had anybody in my office. I've thought about it, and I don't know, maybe one day I would, but I've gotten so used to it. And yeah, maybe one day I will, but it's
virtual's great. It's good for efficiency, good for, you don't need to be in person to do these types of businesses. This is another example that you can run multiple seven figure agency without an office. Like, what do you do in order to keep the team engaged? A lot of people that have an office, they feel like, I can't see the person, and how do you manage that part of it? The engagement, the culture alignment.
Yeah. So, I mean, for that piece, like, because we follow EOS so closely, I'm pretty removed from a lot of the stuff. Like, I'm on the leadership, L10 meetings where we kind of get higher level things, but I don't do the weekly calls. Like Oxo, my operations manager, does all the weekly calls with the whole team. So, I would say, nothing's perfect. We kind of use EOS to kind of judge it, but I'm not good about like having, like, we have our scorecards, we keep KPIs, but I wouldn't say I'm great at like recording everything to know, like, this person is doing really good because of this. Mm. It's almost like we kind of use it. Oh, I don't know. Things seem to surface. I guess I'll put it that way. Like, if websites are always late, or if content's late, or, whatever's late, or, all these mistakes, it seems to kind of surface. And if you have a good team, they seem to like kind of come together to be like, this is a problem. And then we discuss it. I kind of wish it was more of like, you know, systematized, I guess, but overall it seems to, you know, service whether through the L10 meetings or whatever. If there's a problem, usually something comes up. And nowadays, like, Ox is great about getting in front of it. She'll usually hold the meetings and I have no idea anything's even going on. You know, she usually fix it, but things come to me sometimes. But, you know, if you have good people and having that good, I guess a side note there, the culture and like having cool people to work with, you know, if you're hiring people that are just like really good at a skill, but they're like a drag to talk to or they're negative, like, why would you have a business to have all this freedom to then like work with people you don't like? So I would say everybody kind of fits the culture with us of like, you know, being friendly and supportive and helpful for the most part. So those people kind of, you know, the team members seem to come together and kind of weed out any problems for the most part. Nothing's perfect, but the most part.
And I think what you described there is exactly what you want, right? As you grow and scale your agency, it's so you can make more money, have more freedom, have a bigger impact, and, you know, not having to have your fingers involved in company culture, in, you know, the team dynamics. You're involved, but you've got the operational infrastructure in place where there's EOS, there's a leadership team, there's a meeting rhythm and the scorecards. So you've got other people handling that so that you can focus on growing the business and doing what you want to do, which is amazing, right? That's exactly what you want. I want to go a little bit deeper on retention because you mentioned a 98 or 97% retention, which is phenomenal. Like, what do you attribute that to? Is there any specific things you guys are doing in order to really create a great experience and retain those clients at that level?
So I wouldn't say like, I mean, yeah, we do a lot of really great things, but I wouldn't say there's anything like super flashy about what we do. Like, so our account managers, you know, I spent a long time with them. You know, they were kind of probably not happy with me because I spent, you know, we did so many calls and like so much trainings and things. But I kind of looked at it as like I know you do not want to be on a call where you don't feel like you know what you're talking about. It's super embarrassing. It's bad for everybody. And, you know, bad things can happen. So I did my best. A lot of things I could have done better for sure. And those kind of are evident every now and again when I'm like, I should have done it this way. But I did my best to kind of like bring them on the calls. I hired two at the same time because I did it for way too long. So I would bring both of them and we would do all the onboardings, all those things, and did my best to kind of teach them and they would learn from other team members on SEO and ads and things like that. But they would be pretty prepared when it came time to like actually have those calls and would kind of know strategy and know what to talk about. That evolved over time for sure. But I would say that's a big piece. But with agencies, like, people just don't respond, it seems like. You know, like, people just literally don't respond to emails. And as I was going through it, I was like that because I was slow on emails and I'm trying to focus and I'd wait till the end of the day. So I was like, if we want to be separating ourselves, just get back to people quick and, you know, have good answers, have detailed messages and do your best to like explain things. Have calls if you have to, although we try to only do monthly calls. But it's kind of almost the basics with us for that. We do send gifts. We're trying to get more into that. Like, if they hit 100 reviews or something, we'll send a gift over to them. Actually, I was like locked in on the example you and Yesenia sent to me when I had a new baby and you sent me like a care package. I was like so blown away by that. I like couldn't even believe it. And that just stuck in my head. And I'm thinking about it. I'm like, yeah, I know that they actually care and, you know, they're great leaders of this group. But like, if you want to think about it practically, it's like, you're not spending that much on this. And you just had this crazy reaction from me to the point where I was just like unbelievably shocked. So I kind of have that same thing with our team. Like, how can we get better on that? How do we make them feel special? I went to Scotland on vacation, didn't have to talk to anybody the whole trip as a side note, but I was texting a client who's into whiskey, you know, scotch. And he said, this is the one bottle he likes. So I got him like a $200 bottle of this nice whiskey and I shipped it over to him. So I try to do more things like that. And we try as a team, but it's not perfect. It's not like, you know, I guess a workflow where it's like this, do this, you know, it's kind of like think of it on the fly, which probably could be improved.
So, but it sounds like you're like high retention and it's focused on delivering on your promise, generating great results and doing the fundamentals, right? Being responsive, showing that you care, plugging in, and that's working really well for you guys.
Yeah. I mean, I probably should have mentioned that you have to get good results. So right. If you can't prove you're actually doing something well, like none of this is going to matter. So finding, you know, we all have this huge network with you. You know, there's so many conversations you could have of people that are doing different things. We've carved out, you know, things that work in our niche. And, you know, if you double a business in a year or two or whatever, like people notice that. And, you know, you got to have that piece too. You're going to be in trouble if you're just marginally improving things forever. You know, they're going to get impatient.
So good. Well, Alex, so many great insights and takeaways here. Thank you for sharing like how you've grown the business, how you land clients, how you deliver results, how you've structured the team. If you had one other piece of wisdom for that agency owner that's trying to get to the next level, what would that be?
I would just say just get out of your head and do the things that other people that are smarter than you or further along than you are saying to do. I mean, if you have a unanimous vote that you should be doing something because it worked well for people, don't get in your head like, oh, this might be expensive or this or that. Like, just do it and figure it out later. Because if you're one of those people has like the analysis by paralysis or paralysis by whatever the one is, which I do sometimes as well, but some people are just so fixated on the problems and think they can like plan everything perfectly. There's no way, like there's literally no way you're going to plan everything perfectly. So I would say like do the things that you know are working, but add your edge to it. Look for opportunities and have the confidence to like try it a little bit different and just say yes to different things that have a pretty good chance of benefiting you. Even if it might not be like a slam dunk, most things aren't. Say yes, go there, you know, do your best on it. Don't beat yourself up if you didn't have enough conversations, but like, just keep showing up, keep getting your face out there. And, I don't see how it wouldn't work if you're just relentless about it. Like eventually you're going to get those results and, you know, you got to hire, don't think you can do everything yourself. Hire, as soon as you can and often, because think of all the stuff that you hate, everything you hate, you're not going to be good at probably. So find the stuff that you hate, get somebody that's better at it. And just keep growing, keep showing up, keep growing. And, you know, I don't see how it wouldn't work out if you follow all the steps, you know, if you do everything.
So many great insights and takeaways. Thanks for coming on and sharing from your abundance and kind of sharing what's worked for you. If a listener wanted to connect with you or learn more about you, what would be the best way?
So I would just say, I mean, you could reach out through our website if you want to go through there, like deckfencemarketers.com. I'm on social media, just Alex Danner, so you can reach out that way. Either one of those, you know, I'll be available through that. So you can go either one of them.
Amazing. So Alex, thanks again. For those of you listening or watching, if you've got follow-up questions or thoughts, feel free to drop them into the comments here, and we'll see you on a future episode of the 7-Figure Agency Podcast. Thanks everybody. Josh. Thanks, Alex.